It's another Sunday afternoon, time once again for Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. Joining me today in the studio, live and in person, we have Tim Peeler and Ted Pope, both from points east of here. I guess are you actually in Hickory, Tim?
Yeah, that's right.
And Ted, you're still in Morganton, down about that way?
Somewhere near there.
Somewhere near there. Somewhere in the vicinity of Morganton. Excellent. For those of you who've been following Wordplay, Ted won't be a stranger to you. We've done a couple shows featuring readings and performances by Ted. Tim, on the other hand, will be new. I don't believe you've been on the show before, Tim.
That's right, and I appreciate you having me on here, Jeff.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. Yeah, yeah. So, are you on the staff of Catawba Valley Community College? Is that?
That's right. I run their.
We'll play 20 questions here.
Yeah, yeah, I run their learning assistance program, and I've been there for about 15 years in that capacity and also as an English instructor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right. Right.
And I run their visiting writer series.
Uh huh. Right. So that's how you come to hang out with poets.
That's part of it.
Part of it.
Yes.
Part of it. Have you been writing forever, of course, like most poets?
Really since college days, since the mid-70s.
Yeah, yeah. And you're also, you and I are both members of, in fact, all three of us are members of the Lucifer Poetics Group, Fabled Lucy Poe, which is, we're kind of on the western fringes of it, I guess.
Right, and I'm a lurker.
And you're a lurker. I'm a lurker as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing I've done for them is to be promoted to be at two or three poetry readings for them, and then not to show up to any of them. So that'd be my contribution to the group.
That's some qualification.
I'm sure they appreciate it, actually.
Oh, so yeah, they had a reading last night. In fact, down in, I guess it was in Durham, and or at Ken Rumble's place, which I guess is in Durham.
They are a great bunch. Yeah, Ken Rumble and those folks are awesome. I think. Who's got the book out? Lester.
Patrick Harris.
That's Patrick.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise known as Lester, right?
Otherwise known as Lester.
Right, right.
And I think I'm a poet that needs learning assistance. That's how I know Tim. should probably look on Amazon for Ted and Tim's Triumphant Time Adventure Testament. I think that's a pretty hot title right now. Ted and Tim's Time Trial Triumphant Testament. I'd just like go ahead and Google that.
It's due out in 3 months.
Oh, yeah. 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 So is it already in pre-sale?
Yeah. Well, it's already been written at some point in the future.
It's waiting for you when you get there.
Tim and I built a time machine out of cedar one afternoon here in the not-too-distant past, and that's how we got around to that.
Well, great.
Yeah.
I look forward to it, or... Oh.
I can throw you one of those... I could throw you one of those poems right now. From the future. I mean, if you guys haven't heard about the rah-rah robot riots, it begins with, "Do you remember? Do you remember the rah-rah robot riots, blinding pain of the working class in the factories of Europe, in the streets and alleyways, in the fields along the highways and farmlands, still soaking in blood and rust of rah-rah robot riots, brutal rise of a working class, blood, sweat, rust, and metal, artificial fiber cells. There, lonesome in a field, hulking monolith of steel, branded with a name, a number, small birds have built a nest like a crown upon his armored rusty brow. Thunder rumbles in the ironclad clouds." So there's one that...
All right, the ironclad... Wow.
Yeah, so that's the most horrible part.
That poem needs some giant metal spiders.
As they say in Hollywood. Well, here's another one. Teclopathy haiku is something I've been getting into, because pretty soon we're all going to have those implants that make us able to talk telepathically with machines and then with each other, and it's called teclopathy. So... Mm.
I hadn't heard about this.
Well, you can definitely Google that too. Tim and Ted's Teclopathy Haiku Adventure. That's another hot title on Amazon over there.
That's 3 months more out than the other one.
Too lazy right now to work on the LUD screenplay. I do this instead. And the second teclopathic haiku is free from mind hackers. Teclopathic battle fought. He turned it off. That's the other one. Here's a little freeform thing from the future. That entire end of the islands is run by Martians. I wish Burroughs could see them. I wish Titian could paint them. I wish the Titans could fight them. I wish the Pope could saint them. The Queen make them knights of the realm. So I like poetry from the past. I like poetry of the present. I like poetry from the future. And since science is saying that all these moments exist at once, that obliterates those tenses. And so I guess I just like poetry. Well, interesting poetry. So.
Excellent aesthetic. Yeah, fine poetics. Indeed. Indeed. Well, Tim, why don't you read us a couple things? I think the only things I've seen of yours have been on the Lucipo list.
Yeah, I would.
And I know you write more than that.
If the people that know my work know that the main point of my poetry is to depress the audience.
And it's a fine goal. Yeah.
I just wanted to get this one out of the way first. This is one that I wrote just the other night. And it came as many times poems do on the heels of a death. And for the last 3 or 4 years, my wife and I have been attending a New Year's Eve party at a good friend of ours' house, a guy named David Dixon. And his friends from his days in Surrey County always come to attend. And there was a guy who was always there named Kelly Eanes, who was just a really incredible person who had graduated from Carolina in the mid-60s, got drafted into the Marines, went to Vietnam, parted ways with the military whenever he got back, and then helped start a commune over on the Mitchell River, which still exists today, even in his absence. And
what's the name of the commune?
I don't know.
He never told me
all the times I talked to him. I don't know. It's okay. In the Mitchell River Basin.
Hmm.
And he did a lot of work over there with River Watch and those type conservation organizations. And this, my wife and I would sit there and watch these people dance in the living room there as the night went on. It was always interesting because there, you know, lots of partying going on.
Lots of partying, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's where this poem came from. And it's called Watching Kelly Dance. Watching Kelly dance with his wife New Year's Eve on Dixon's wooden living room floor before the roaring fireplace, white beard, boots, jeans, and flannel shirt, an impossibly obscure shag song guiding them through slow turning circles, golden flames licking dry oak, dancer shadow passing through fire shadow, their time stopped, flushed, smiling faces.
Hmm.
That's for you, Kelly.
Nice. Is Kelly still with us? Or
He died about 4 or 5 days ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Prostate cancer.
Oh, that's rough. Yeah.
But he was one of a kind.
Yeah. Well, give a shout out to his spirit up there.
Yes, please do. And David Dixon, also a good guy.
Yeah.
One of the things that I worked on quite a bit during the first half of 2008 was this manuscript of poems that are loosely about the time that I ran hotels as a hotel manager back during the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And the manuscript is called Checking Out. And
right. I remember some of these from your Malaprop.
Yeah, you probably do. Yeah, and I guess I ought to watch what I read here.
Radio. Remember the, seven deadly words.
Right. Now, and I've got Ted here who wields them with.
Oh, yeah. I know at least 18 deadly words. 21.
But I'll read something from that. These are
wonderful. I think some of these can be found on the internet. You guys Google Tim Peeler, seriously, and there's some things that exist now that you should check out.
What sites would they be up on?
Porn sites, I think.
Porn sites. Hotbabes.com.
That's it. Yeah. let's see. I actually started a blog in support of this manuscript because I have a publisher looking at it, mm-hmm. and they're going to decide in about 3 or 4 days whether or not they're going to do it or they're listening.
Great. So what is the name of the blog? Give us the URL, the whole thing.
The name of the book?
The blog and the book.
Oh, the blog is called Checking Out.
Checking Out.
Yeah.
Is it checkingout.blogspot.com or?
Probably so. Yeah, I'm not even sure.
If you Googled Checking Out blog, you would find...
Yeah, you would go to it. I'm pretty sure there's not another one out there unless it's some, you know, something about people
hotel
dying,
management,
maybe.
Or who knows. Or, yeah, right. Mortuary blog.
but this manuscript's divided up into about 4 or 5 sections. And one of the places that I worked at for 7 or 8 years was a independent motel. And the Friday, Saturday night... debacle hung heavily for all of us that worked there every week. And one section of these poems is called Chaos, and I want to read the first poem out of that. And all of these poems are numbered. This one's number 15. Chaos. When you're not war, revolution, or murder, you're a Friday night at a cheap motel. You're a crackhead crouching beyond the lobby light, 2 requests for rollaways, a complaint about a high school party in 208. You are the growling gut of a missed dinner, the drunken woman's smeared makeup showing her tan lines, asking if the cable has Playboy. You are the gun lights of every midnight cruiser, every fatal picked up chick waiting in the dark swarm for the revelry. You are the moon's arc over the mountain, love pledged on Saturday's balcony, the unbalanced audits, miscounted money. You are the distant siren, the ring, the knock, the broken lock.
Nice.
And I'll read a couple more of these if you want to.
Yeah, please do.
More Ted for a minute.
Okay, yeah.
Pick something out.
All right. Well, you're listening to Wordplay. This is WPVM 103.5, the broadcast service of the Mountain Area Information Network. And you're listening to Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis, in the studio today, live and in person, Tim Peeler and Ted Pope. Alrighty.
Nothing.
So, let's have a poem, Ted.
I've got a Yankee Doodle Dander, keeps me itching and scratching all the time. I've got a Yankee Doodle Dandy, I've got some Yankee Doodle in my eye. I'm a real live nephew of my Uncle Sam, who ruined me when I was a child. A real live nephew of my creepy Uncle Sam, who ruined me when I was a child. Did you find a poem yet, Tim? Because I really want to hear you. And just
I was just watching you read this out of the air.
Just whenever there's a lull, I'll just talk about Carl Jung, who was a bull rider of some note. He was born on a ranch near the border. And on the big day of the rodeo, he was going to ride a bull named Minos. It was owned by a rancher named Joe Campbell.
Mm.
Anyway, Tim's got a poem.
We want more of that story later. Yes, it's going to be a serial here.
Hold that thought.
Hold on for 8 seconds.
All right.
There's one section about our swimming pool and all of the things that were associated with this.
Mm-hmm.
I was basically in charge of a 20,000-gallon swimming pool for about 6 summers.
How big is that, 20,000 gallons?
I don't know. I just remember that was the size because every time I had to get anything for it, that was...
You had to get it for the 20,000
gallons.
Had to get it
for a 20,000-gallon pool.
Right.
And there's one section in this manuscript called Swimming. And all of these poems are related in some way to that swimming pool. And one of the things that I had to do, it was a very old pool, and there are a few places down around the drain that never got cleaned.
Mm.
And the only way you could do it was to dive down there 10 feet under and with a brush, like, quickly try to scrape around that drain to try to get it clean.
And did that fall to you?
I would do that sometimes during the summer. And for a long time, I had dreams about diving down in that pool and getting a finger caught in the drain and not being able to come back up.
Being trapped.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure everybody has that dream. I don't know what brought that up, but I'm going to read three of these poems that are in that section.
Right. This is swimming, right.
And this first one is checking out 23. One winter, it snowed every Wednesday for six straight weeks, sending salesmen home, stranding employees. The clerks shared a double and slept in shifts, drinking beer, playing cards. The owner sent me out in his white Suburban to fetch the maids at the projects over behind the hospital. I'd plow through each parking lot, window down, hollering the motel name. I also picked up Holiday Inn, which they owned as well. 8 to 10 cranky, unwilling women a trip, cramped in the four-wheeler, scared to death of the snow, poor and desperate enough to go anyway. Night, the snow lay thick at the bottom of the empty pool. More fell through mercury light, piling the scraped driveways, hiding the highway again. On the cable in our room, Reagan delivered his fourth State of the Union address. Which places this, at least.
Yes, historically.
Sets it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
I give in and do that occasionally in here.
Mm-hmm.
And this next one is about manager on duty and working weekends where I had to stay all night at another hotel that I ran. And at the time, I was working on a master's thesis, and I would be typing on an old typewriter through the night, and I would get complaints from customers about me.
The typing noise.
Yeah, in one of the rooms.
Rowdy.
Yeah. So that's what this one's about, among other things. It's checking out 24. I wrote a master's thesis in a motel room, weekend manager on duty, typewriter nights, I answered complaints about myself. Between check-ins, I scribbled pieces of poems, made up stories about guests, and I was sending stuff out then, scrounging for stamps, checking the post office box. I can't remember how many times I crawled under a motel building at 3 a.m. to change a fuse, put the wheels back on a rollaway, fix the commode, walk through pitch black, blessed by the moon. I became the poet laureate of the post office whores, the random darling of a small legion of fools, the familiar of charming drunks, a blundering father in the no man's land of the 80s. When I dove into the pool to clean the spot by the drain, 10 feet down, I felt a dreamy pressure of the whole world above me. Sensed that the water really didn't want to be there either. And one more, or maybe two, I don't know. I like the swimming poems, but...
Yeah, well, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll do two of these while Ted's thinking
indulge
up
yourself.
Into his story.
Right, and then we'll return to the...
Yeah.
Pamper yourself
saga.
With poetry, yeah. Tim.
The motel that I ran was in at one time kind of a country part of the county that had grown up quickly, and there were still... some dirt roads back in behind it where folks lived in trailers and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids would come over and get in the swimming pool, and one of my jobs was to go run everybody off.
Right.
And that's what this one's about. And it's number 25. They'd come from the red dirt roads out behind the drive-in screen, riding Kmart bikes with wide handlebars and banana seats, popping wheelies up the driveway, past the dried-up fountain, then weave into a single file of long-haired punk kids hiding their bikes behind the building that formed its brick mouth into a horizontal sea around the pool, then sneak up the cement steps out through the breezeway at 114. Some days, when I knew the owner was gone, I'd ignore them for an hour, their crazed dives and wild hoops, the cut-off jeans and bruised legs, but then I'd have to go do my job. Sneak around the corner, surprise them with my voice. What you boys doing here? I'd ask, as if I'd never seen them before. And they'd always reply, playing along. We're staying in those rooms back there. Already filing out the pool gate, wet and headed back to dirt roads, hot trailers, alcoholic stepfathers. And I'll read you one more of those. This one's 26. Saturday afternoons, the pool area was a spectacular mess of scary tattooed guys, half-drunken pregnant girlfriends in black bikinis, screaming blue-eyed children with red Kool-Aid-stained smiles, stampeding in cut-off shorts across the marble deck as Garth Brooks throbbed from a Sony Ghetto Blaster. It was the summer that Huey Lewis craved a new drug, and we were caught between the struggle to fill rooms and the need to preserve them. The owner stopped by in his yellow Mercedes, phoned me at home to come clear out the riffraff, and I'd drive north 7 miles tasting bile and chlorine, the July clouds gathering into black and gray hammers. By the time my Ford pickup hit the driveway, the thunderclaps started, great drops of rain splatting the pool, a sudden north wind ripping at the awning. I eyed the vacant scene through slashing windshield wipers as karma settled across the scorched valley. So sometimes it worked out.
Yeah, yeah. Nice, nice. Very, very much, I mean, you're writing in a narrative tradition that's all about the human world, which is kind of unusual, I mean, these days in poems.
It is.
You know? Yeah, yeah. I like it.
Tim's also a baseball historian. He's got some books out about baseball and some other books.
Oh, yeah?
Collections of baseball poems.
Ted's been following me.
Yeah. Huh. But well, that's good.
I'm a fan. It's an indictment more than anything.
It is an indictment.
One of the charges against you is...
Guilty.
Guilty. Well, what is the name of your baseball book?
I have... two local baseball histories, one baseball in Catawba County and another one Voices from Baseball in Catawba County, which is oral history. Uh-huh. And that one just came out 4 or 5 months ago. And then one that I did with a historian named Hank Utley on, it's called Outlaw Ball Players. And it's profiles and oral histories of outlaw players from the Depression era, Carolina League, and the Charlotte to Valdez-Lenoir triangle, which is quite interesting.
Outlaw players?
They were outside of the National Association of Professional Baseball Leagues. They were illegal leagues that existed for about 3 years.
Who knew?
Until they got squashed.
Yeah, yeah. Would they get taken to court or something? Or
they? Yeah. The players all got blackballed and weren't allowed to go back in. They finally let most of them go back in within about 2 or 3 years. But they came out because the local mill owners were paying more money than the actual organized ball people were. And it's very, very interesting. I could go on. You don't want to get me started on that subject, believe me.
Interesting social history, though.
It is.
Yeah.
There's one key figure in it, a guy named Alabama Pitts, who was a... prisoner in Sing Sing, and while he was there they found out that he was a tremendous baseball and football player, and the professional leagues were trying to sign him whenever he came out, and baseball was bigger than football at the time, so that was the direction he wanted to go in, and it became a big court case and a major national discussion as to whether or not that guy was allowed to play professionally, and they
because usually it works the other way. The professional players they find make model prisoners.
Yes, that's right. And in, you know, interestingly enough, the guy ended up down here, and after his career, he was only 30 years old, settled in Valdez of all places, and was at a dance hall on a Saturday night, got stabbed to death. It's quite a story.
Yeah.
We're trying to sell it as a movie, right?
Don't go dancing.
We do have somebody interested in it, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's got the... Who have we got in that role? Kevin Costner reprising his baseball?
He's not tough enough for that one.
Right.
It's great to look.
Russell Crowe, maybe.
Maybe so.
Look at these old photographs of these teams in Tim's book. And you see these guys standing on the back of a wagon, and they've got their baseball paraphernalia, and then a couple of them will have shotguns, and most of them will have cigarettes hanging out of their mouths.
And their hound dogs lying in front of them.
Dogs, yeah. I'm going to go play baseball.
A couple of jugs of moonshine over on the side, probably. Yeah. That's great. How'd you get into baseball? Always been
a fan. Mm-hmm. And really, I started writing about it back in the early 80s. I've written two full-length books of baseball poems that were published by McFarlane back in the late 90s, 99, 2000. So I've written probably more baseball poems than any other foolish human being ever. Yes.
Yeah, McFarlane, that's the guy that did Spawn, right?
So you're on the
comic. So, well, it's Tim and I have been giving some poetry readings at tire stores lately. So I'd written a poem about that.
That's the next big thing is the tire store. Tire store lobby.
Right.
Will be the next big venue.
Advocating for tire stores as venues.
It's an important. So that's on your radar. That makes me feel great.
We're gonna start the World Goodyear Tour next year.
I don't know. You know, here the obituary for a poetry reading and. The poetry reading is survived by the poet, the poet's family, the poet's friends, many of whom are also poets, poets who aren't friends of the poet but who go to poetry readings with the unspoken expectation that the favor be returned, young poets who pretend even to themselves that they saw something inspiring so they don't have to face another waste of an evening. One of the poets in attendance claimed that the poetry reading could have been saved if they had moved it full speed ahead to the lobby of a tire store. The poet took a seashell from inside his coat and placed it next to his ear. He spread his fingers and stuck his thumb on the side of his head so that it looked like antlers or antenna. The poet stood like that for a moment, and then he took his hand down and he put the shell away, and then he continued to explain. People are tired of having their poetry interrupted by cappuccino machines. People want poetry that is interrupted by pneumatic drills. They want compression and rattling of chains. People waiting in tire store lobbies want poetry, even if it just allows them a chance to tell people how much they hated it. Even if they act embarrassed for the poet, or become angry and walk out, or throw you out. But they want it. If we had only taken the poetry reading immediately to a tire store, the people in the lobby would have saved it. We wanted to save the poetry reading ourselves, but we were just a bunch of poets, and the best we could do was sit with it and watch it and hold its hand and watch it breathe its last. Okay, said the poet. Okay.
And next time we're taking this on TV because you folks are missing out on the hand gestures.
Oh, yeah. I've got my 10,000-year-old long-tooth Blu-ray shell phone with me. My shell phone is connected to the Horizon network. It's like falling into your arms. Your face is too big, or else we're too close. You want what we all want. Start with loneliness, frustration, or love. Divine diamonds of the heart's mind, they shine. The eyes set way back under the war helmet of one of Hannibal's soldiers crossing the Alps at night on the back of his elephant. Like moving into your world, like falling into your arms. And these are in a book that Tim Peeler published. I'll indict him again. Dude, he's up on it. There's all kinds of charges.
Yeah, another charge.
When the revolution comes.
I'm going to be gone for a long time, folks.
There's a lot of charges pending.
What's the name of the book, Ted?
It's called Jousting from the Back of a Mule. Yeah. And again, if you get over to Amazon, that's a pretty hot title over there. Is on it? One of those popular bookselling sites. A-Books or somebody probably pay you to take it and ship it to you if you get on eBay.
I think I saw one for $1,000 on eBay, I'm pretty sure.
I've seen stuff from like $3 to $97. Mm-hmm.
So if people wanted to buy this, is it actually on Amazon? Or
no, God, no. They'd need to go. They'd need to probably contact him, and there might need to be a second printing, as in we might need to print another one. We might need to.
You printed several copies of this. I know, because I've got one of them.
We just came out with the 11th copy. It's a 10th anniversary copy, and it's actually the 10th copy that has been printed. And that's why this is completely appropriate. The title of it's Jousting from the Back of a Mule, and here's the poem that goes with it. I am jousting from the back of a mule. O timeless Mother Isis, grant me yet another hour to perfect the walk I will walk to the grave. Paint the mask that I will wear in death. Jesus, Isis, Osiris, Buddha. Someday some artist will paint me, embarrassed for me upon my mule. She will paint me instead upon a white stallion, a steed of swift air and green muscle. That's a whole lot better than them ironclad clouds. Ain't it? I love that. I love the inning. Green muscle.
That's like, good. That's good. Yeah.
Walt Wise ass. That might be one of those. We won't back up.
No.
I mean, just feel free to. I'd have to. You know, I don't have to fill up the clock.
We'll get there.
Anybody tune out?
Yeah. Are we taking calls?
Yeah. Only if we had somebody to answer them would we take calls. You are listening to Wordplay at WPVM 103.5 on your FM dial, or you're probably listening on the internet anyway, so you know where it is. It's WPVM.org.
But we're phoning it in from a secret location, so right, don't come up here looking to catch me as I come out and lock me up for bad poetry.
Yeah. I'm your host, Jeff Davis, and with me today, Ted Pope and Tim Feeler. Fun.
Yeah. Here's one about the current financial crisis, if we want to do stay on topic like one of the radio shows. Everybody likes Tom Waits. Tom Waits, 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 Tom Waits. We have reached the event horizon where Tom Waits droppings may be used as hard currency. That's right, folks. Step right up to witness as a white-gloved attendant stands by, a sterling bowl nestled in his mitts, ready and waiting for Tom to take a dump there. Spectators stand by, mouths watering, dreaming of all the health food they will buy. Vials of swan's tongues, velvet cucumber extract, seed of storm giants, elixirs made from flowers so red they can only be harvested while wearing a welder's mask. Go! Soil yourself, Tom. We're all waiting, and it's less than 200 days until the Christ Mass. We need gifts. We need gifts. We need gifts. We need gifts. Gold, frankincense, myrrh, and a little fat turd for the Christ child's hand. Tom is here, smelling like an animal, dressed as a shepherd. You'd think Tom would go for the wise man, wise guy look, but no. From the shadows of his woolen cowl, he leers across the manger at the new little mother and growls in his low tones. So how you doing tonight, Mary darling? The stars overhead tinkle their twinkling ivories. So...
I just want to mention, for those of you out there that are on Facebook, we're always looking for new members of the Ted Pope fan club.
Oh, that's right. I was going to mention that myself.
Yeah,
actually.
We welcome you to join that.
Right.
You get to see new Ted Pope writings as they come out at the very hour that they're often generated.
That's right. Unlike most fan groups on Facebook, there's actually content.
There is. Yes. We actually tried it.
Now we're going to call it content.
As it were.
So it's actually,
for lack of a better term,
it's a CIA conspiracy to make sure that that you're easy to find when the fascist regime takes power. Don't sign up.
We try to keep it interesting, though. We've actually got a video on there of Bear Goot Eagles hunting wolves in Mongolia, which is pretty interesting.
Right. Yeah.
Got that from Ron Rash. He was nice enough to send it to us.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's an amazing thing to watch. Not that you can't get that content somewhere else, but these eagles, these guys go out on the steppes and they not out on the steps in front of their house, like out on the steps. And they use these eagles to hunt wolves, and these wolves take these eagles down. I mean, these eagles take these wolves down, and you just think that the eagle's going to be completely overpowered in a moment, and they're not. It's just, it's amazing to see.
It is pretty awesome. Yeah.
It's part the Ted Pope Fan Club is part Wild Kingdom. Two parts, maybe.
Right. Hey, something like I'd written this week. I'd built a motorcycle that is powered by garlic bulbs, and when you start it, it goes onion, 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 onion. How about here's a night. Tim needs to find another one. I'll read a beautiful.
Yeah, I want to hear one of those baseball poems.
Yeah. Tim needs to. That's how I found Tim. He hit me with a baseball bat. Let's see. All right, bright child. Here's an old one. If anybody in Asheville knows me, they've probably heard this one. Bright child, where are you glowing, radiating your eternal primal essence? You got me, bright child. You got me from the first time I saw you crawl across the open floor to that first time that I saw you walk upon fire. You got me, bright child, holy child, child of all my hope and reverence. I saw her coming down 4th Street again today. Today would not be like any other day. Oh no, I'm gonna follow that girl to see where she goes to get that glowing, eternal, primal essence. Follow me if you can. She knows I've got a little leather left upon the soles of my shoes, and so I do follow her down in my flat-footed gait to that place where she waits upon that glowing, eternal, primal essence. A smiling Japanese tea garden, even this the moon garden of the sun. But she, like no other, knows others in both night and day, but none as clear and bright and pure as her. Take some tea, says the man in the corner behind me. I did not know the corner was there. I did not know the man was there. He smiles and I bow. I'll take anything, anything that you've got. And he goes away to get my tea. And the bright child girl, where is she? There up on the low wall, the cherry blossoms are hanging across her face like a veil. It is her wedding day.
I'd like to read something on here for my buddy Tim Early.
Oh, yeah.
Who?
Another Luciferian.
Yeah, another. Yeah, he's a Luciferian, all right.
And and formerly worked with you at Catawba Valley, right?
And he really, you know, you're affected by whoever you're around and who you work with. Mm-hmm. And I would say that Tim's work and style and so forth have had a lot of effect on me since I've known him.
Yeah.
I guess since 2003 or so. Yeah.
Well, it's pretty high impact work.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And this is a poem in 10 parts, and it's called "Let's Have a Bullfight." Number one, drinking is a strategy. Chemistry is a failure. Number two, a shirtless boy runs from behind a tree across a dirt yard. Number three, there is nothing, and then there is the sound of a horn. Number four, the red-faced crowd slowly makes the dreamy connection. Number five, a young man leans on crutches near the top of the stadium. Number six, through the stench of the ages, the lion smells the Christians. Number seven, while the boy sits for his haircut, Mama tells little black Sambo. Number eight, father has a timbre in his voice that makes people. Number nine, the sky glowers, the sword is raised. Number ten, the young man shifts and remembers his dumb animal look. And I'll read a couple more. Mm-hmm. This is out of my last book of poems called Fresh Horses, which is from Rank Stranger Press.
Okay. All right. Are they on the web?
This is.
Yeah. Okay.
I think so. Probably no longer available, but.
No. Oh,
okay. No, I think you can. I think I looked today.
Yeah, you should be able to get it.
Yeah.
But I'll read a couple of these.
And that's Fresh Horses from Rank Stranger
Press. From Rank Stranger Press.
All right.
And it's done out of Main Street Rag Publishing out of Charlotte.
Out of Charlotte.
That's who actually puts it out.
Right. They're busy folks.
They are, yeah. Scott Douglas is very good to poetry right now, let me tell you.
Yeah, that's great.
Give a shout out to Scott.
Yeah.
This is one about the Andy Griffin Show, and it's called TV Land. Let me make sure there's no words in here I shouldn't say on the radio. Every school teacher is a bowling alley beauty queen. With hybrid animals, perfect teeth, a little boy's gift apple, omniscient girl box standard. Her snow-blind smile, calves that affect a graceful turn in low heels. Yet, in the gray barn behind Otis's house, beyond the town's mysterious limit, ghosts hang, hide stretched on the tin roof in the blazing sun, and when Andy turns his serious straight man glare on that mischievous Opie, there's no fishing pole on his shoulder, no rock-skipping, whistling look. World-weary, fierce, Hollywood can't hide lynching memories, the hangman's face like a split purple grape, the spooks, the jigaboos pressed off the set, locked in Otis's barn to wait for a water fountain or a bathroom, when they gotta go like a bastard, like a citizen's arrest, like an old man standing on a crate to look in a jail cell full of Christmas. A spiffy, crowless hoax. No Faulknerian poker party to win a slave or two. Every day is a pie cooling in an open window, a mildly ethical dilemma, the teenagerless landscape bowling under, the middle testament. Only the party girls with their cigarette voices, their cheesy Moose Lodge muzak, a brutish criminal sprinkled in the woods by the lake, and Barney Bullitt baffling magnificence.
Nice. That's a very different rhetoric than you're currently using.
Yeah, these are quite different. The checking out poems are very much conventional narrative, linear.
They're very
poems.
Spare, yeah, compared to this. This is spiffy, crowless hoaxes. That's really...
this really... I have to give a shout out to Leo Kanellin, who was one of my... Well, really my big mentor when I really started writing back in the 70s. And I got to know him in the 80s and on up to his death. And although his writing is probably considered pretty lowbrow, as mine is as well, he really had a big effect on me because I liked the way that he used words that clashed with each other and slammed them up against each other.
A lot of energy there.
Yeah, lots of energy by doing that. Lots of hard consonant sounds working against each other in sentences, and lots of functional shift, especially a lot of functional shift, which is what you see a lot in my poetry, I think.
I don't know his work. Where was he? Was he?
He was a Connecticut State Poet Laureate for, I guess, the last 7 or 8 years of his life. And he was from Maine. And most of his work is about the lobster men off of Maine. His big work is a trilogy of long poems called The Clear Blue Lobster Water Country. And it's a really magnificent piece of work that really goes away from that conventional narrative linear idea. And it's somewhat hard to follow, but his characters are just amazing. Some of it's based on his own life and times in rehab and so forth. But it's really good.
And his name again is Leo?
Leo Kanellin.
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 Okay.
That's who did my master's thesis on in the motel.
Oh, yeah.
I was working on Leo.
So, did you grow up in Connecticut, or
did I?
Yeah,
no, I'm from here.
But
from
how did you come across his work?
When I was at East Carolina, one thing that really helped me out as a writer was that I lived with art majors, and I was very much affected by what they did with images and just by them, because they were almost, some of them, like living poems or something. Those kind of people, and one of them, a guy named Mike Loderstedt, who's now the head of the art department at Kent State, came up to me one day, and he had picked up a used copy of selected poems from Leo Kanellin, which is part of the Pitt Poetry series from like 75 or so.
Right.
And gave it to me, gave me that copy, and I read it and just thought, you know, kind of a light went on. You know, this guy's writing about blue-collar people and things that I understand, and he's approaching poetry differently from other things that I'd seen. It's blue collar like Bukowski, but it's better developed and you know, more artistic. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, shout out to Leo.
All right, shout out to Leo. All right.
Who died in 2001, shortly after the election was finalized. I think it killed him.
Yeah, probably.
I think it killed
him. Probably a lot of fatalities from that. Oh, man. Yeah.
Have I got time to read one
more? You do.
More?
You have plenty of time.
I'll read one more out of this book. It's called I Guess We Are the Gods, and this one's for Ted, because he understands what it's like to be a god.
No doubt.
See how the moon floats silver where the river lunges under the highway bridge forever? Everything young grows old looking into this mirror, and everything old grows dead looking away. And we, too, were once concerned about appearances. We wanted to be silver moons. We wanted to surf the river and glide like phantoms under concrete abutments, high-wire clotheslines, dance across barn roofs. We were once so young, our mothers named us. Now we are one note in the coyote's holy conundrum, a bass lick one can barely hear. And yet the moon climbs over temples to silver our river. I guess we are the gods.
Nice. Yeah.
Okay, Ted.
Super.
So, back to your story.
What's happening with Carl Jung and his attempt to write minors?
Okay. So it was the day of the big rodeo, and Carl Jung had to ride Minos. Let's see. I don't want to remember this story wrong. Okay. We only got 8 minutes, but a bull ride only takes 8 seconds. So so his father had died is a horrific sentence. But I was in a hurry when I wrote it. Whatever, it sucks. These are two cowpokes talking. Don't you think your ex sucks? Shh. I hear sirens. What kind of sirens? Women or the police? Police women. I thought you were telling me about a bull rider. About a bull. No, I'm telling you about a bull rider. Well, the bull rider is you, because you've been riding this bull for more than 8 seconds. That's not funny. It's not meant to be. Wait. Shh. I hear Scientology can cure dyslexia. Can I have that in writing? What about Carl Jung? What about him? He was a young man in the desert. He saw a lot of stuff that wasn't really there, and a lot of stuff that was really there he shouldn't have seen. What do you mean? I don't know. I got it from the bull's owner, Joe Campbell. I thought the bull's owner was William Morris. I think Minos belongs to Minos, came a voice from the dark. Shh, listen. Who is that? It sounded like the voice came from over there in that labyrinth. Of course, the pair of cowpokes went into the labyrinth. The source of the voice was a pimp, and the pimp took them through many winding ways and walls and hedges, soft moss, brittle lichen, sharp thorns. The further into the labyrinth, the darker the skies became. The further they went, the more aroused they became. It became pretty obvious. And then, almost feeling their way through the dark, they arrived at a shaky bridge made of rotten planks and jungle vines. One of the cowpokes crossed himself. They crossed a fathomless chasm as the pimp led the way. There was an island in the midst of the endless labyrinth. On the island, there was a city. The pimp led them through a maze of back streets to a nightclub known as the Gaza Strip. He waited. He wrapped the leather strap around in a suicide knot. He slipped two bits in the slot on the side of the mechanical bull. As the bull spun and bucked, the nightclub became a dilapidated Eastern European psychiatric ward, a collective fever, a worldview. The Germans have a word for it. It starts with a V. Oh, no, thought the cowpoke. I've gone crazy. Germans, worldview. The only German I've ever met is a knife sharpener from Texas. And worldview... For the life of him, the cowpoke didn't know. He knew what a world was, a ball. He knew what a view was. He was paying for a view. A visitor at the ranch had once commented on the beautiful view. The cowpoke looked out to where the visitor gestured. He saw what he always saw, the mountains and that goddamn labyrinth. Okay. So the cowpokes are inside the Gaza Strip nightclub, and I decide I'm going to walk around one of these side streets, and I see a water fountain. And as I approach it, I see that it says whites only. And I know that I don't think the cowpokes are worth saving, and I don't know that I even care if Carl Jung can ride the nasty old bull for 8 seconds, so I'm going to leave. So I wrapped my arm under my horse's neck, and I stroked him under his chin, and I hugged his head, and he was a great horse. He opened his mouth easily, accepting the bit, and he was as eager as I was to be gone from here at 12:33 a.m. I was riding peg to Patagonia. That was the plan. It got boring riding through apocalyptic landscapes and shifting sands. I know shifting sands, trust me, they're only interesting for the first 1,000 days. I got bored and stared at the sun, but that hurt, so I broke out a window in some old store. I took plenty of batteries. I strapped a DVD player on the back of Peg's head. I know Peg is a terrible name to inflict on a male horse, but one of his four legs was wooden. Nah, I'm just kidding. That would be ridiculous. However, the horse's mother was a human, but that is, as they say, a story for another day. And I really want to say an other day, but whatever. Anyway, the plan was to ride Peg to Patagonia and see if we could book a submarine to Antarctica. I hear they need farmhands and horse seamen. No, seriously, the Antarctic Gathering has sent out a call by such means of communication as are available. They want to preserve many of life's of the Earth's life forms as possible, as much diversity. Anyway, I'm gonna catch a. I'm gonna go to Patagonia and catch a submarine to the Antarctic. And I mean, it's getting close to 3 o'clock, so I don't know if we have time for all that.
Well, we got probably 5 more minutes.
Okay, so
onward.
So wolf nematodes. These wolf nematodes are desert worms. They're 12 feet long with row upon row of spiny teeth. They used to live in the sea and be benign, but now, A pack of them, hey, 20 or so, like cigarettes. Cigarettes with teeth. Rocks, 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 rocks. God damn it, where are some rocks? They like the loose sand, and I need some rocks. So I find the rocks. I wipe Peg down and water him. The blind nematodes smell the sweat and water. They're really crazy. Now, even the cold of the nighttime doesn't drive them under. Peg and I go to sleep and we dream. We dream of Mayan women pulling barbed rope through holes in their tongues. They receive pain exquisite and the sacred vision comes. We got time for this too, butterfly. I will wrap you in beads and in bells and in all the colors of the evening sky. We dream. We dream blood, we dream water, we dream earth, fire, and air. I seen all the stars of heaven tangled up there. In her hair. But she leapt into the sea, or was she pushed out there through the stars? Just so you know, the stars, I meant the sea, I meant the jungle. Okay, just relax. She hit my teeth just like ice, made me wonder what she'd done to my heart. Struck the rock and it gave up its water. Ain't that kind of like the things we done to each other? My life has flown about 1,000,000 light years away from here tonight. I've counted every one of these stars and I've divided by the hours since you've been gone. And I've got nothing. I've got nothing left to believe anymore anyway. Why don't you take that? Why don't you break that? Why don't you bounce that off one of them there satellites? Send it over the radio waves and the wire. Well, then she set a crown right down up on top of my head and said, boy, why don't you stand up straight? And all of the while, the whole world knows I've got feet of clay, so I'm standing around with my head in the clouds, wondering where it is I'll fall down. Okay. So Peg and I wake up. Peg's licking my face. I'm just going to drive on with this. I guess some news will come on or some music. So Peg's licking my face and the sun's high and we're on a rocky island in a sea of shifting sands. And Peg followed my gaze out across the landscape. The horse raised its head and snorted. Yep, old bud, they're out there. You see that ridge line? Peg snorted again. We've got to make that ridge line. I put the telescope back into the saddlebag. Not yet. Let's let them sit in the heat. Maybe they'll burrow down further. When it gets good and hot, that's the worst part of the day for mutant nematode worms. Everybody knows that. Peg and I sat in the shade of a rock. Water had collected in a few pools among the rocks. There were a few tiny black frogs around. That's always a good sign. We were almost to the ridge when I felt dozens of needle-sharp teeth pierce my leg, just above my boot top. I had my knife out. I tried desperately to cut the bastard away. I could not get enough leverage. Peg was galloping. Suddenly, one of the horse's hoofs stepped directly onto the body of the thing, ripping it in half. It didn't let go of me, and it wasn't dead, but with 8 feet of its body ripped off, the nematode was holding on only because some of its teeth were stuck in my flesh. Peg stopped suddenly, rearing up slightly. We had reached the ridge line. The ridge line was a cliff. Now the rest of the pack had reached us. Back and forth, Peg feinted and dodged. Like a show horse, like a barrel race, or like a mighty charger, he clobbered a couple of the pack with his hooves. But in the end, there was no choice, so I held on with a suicide grip, and Peg leapt from the cliff, out, like sugar and ashes thrown to the wind, like sugar and ashes flowing out to the sea. I dreamed we lived on the bottom of a river. I know it was a river because the water was flowing, a gentle tug, and out, beyond the call of the iron wrecks, traveled upriver from the sea. The man fished me out of the river. Peg was already standing on the bank. He dragged me up a little farther. I vomited water, and he built a fire. I come down to this river here to get my head clear. And when my time is up and I've drained my cup, I hope I won't have to go out so full of rage and confusion. Oh, this river here, it knows no fear, and so I come down here to get my head clear. The man was singing and so on, and it was a pretty good song. And soon he had a fire going. Okay, I gotta sterilize that wound. Okay, ow! It's okay.
So this is another extended piece in the mode of Red Lipstick, or you're different. I mean, it's a different mode.
Yeah.
I think I heard the whole Ted Pope canon in there, you know, from being pulled from all over the place.
Right.
It went
right.
Kaboom. Ted Pope's canon goes kaboom.
Does it have a title, a working title? Or?
It's called The Bull Rider, and I think I primarily wanted to write the sentence, Carl Jung was a bull rider of some note. And it's Jung with a Y, and I don't know, it just made me laugh, and that's what, I don't know, it just, you know.
No.
But yeah, we're going to get to, I think Antarctica is definitely the new Eden, and Japan is the new Atlantis, mm-hmm. and I think events will bear me out when they happen, so stay tuned.
You heard it here first.
Take the bull by the horns.
Well, thanks so much for coming in today, guys. We've been listening to Tim Peeler and Ted Pope, and really appreciate your making the trip over up the mountains today. It's been a hoot. So that's pretty much Wordplay for today. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. Catch us on the web at wpvm.org, and that's probably where you've already caught us. And if you need more information, you can email me at wordplayradio@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to provide you Tim Peeler's email address so that you can get copies of Ted Pope's book, which is now in its 10th printing. Oh, and don't forget the Ted Pope fan club on Facebook. Thanks very much.